At Market District, we believe in the power of great taste. So here's a little taste of all the delicious possibilities. Juicy, hand-picked heirloom tomatoes. Seared certified Angus steak over aged cheddar mashed potatoes. Or how about fresh dough stretched by hand for every house-made pizza? Is your mouth watering yet? From produce to meats to chef-made meals, discover great taste at Market District.
Have you ever wondered what it's like behind the scenes at Summerfest?
It flies by and there's just so much to cover, but there's no real kind of adrenaline rush on the job like covering Summerfest, because the deadlines are really tight and you're seeing so many different things and you have to be a quick expert on so many different types of music. So it's a real blast. It's a privilege and a lot of fun.
That's music writer Piet Levy. Piet joins us with more on this year's Summerfest later in today's show. I'm your host, Katie O'Connell, coming to you from Washington, D.C. this weekend. Thanks so much for tuning in. A mysterious envelope arrived at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's newsroom recently. Inside were documents that led reporter Jacob Carpenter to uncover a story about a Green Bay man who has applied for hundreds of jobs in order to threaten companies with lawsuits. Reporter Mary Louise Schumacher asked Jacob about this unfolding story.
Okay, so Jacob, you have this great story coming up about a gentleman who apparently is living in Green Bay and applying for hundreds of jobs, apparently to file lawsuits. Tell us a little bit about how you came across this story.
We actually had an envelope that was left with us here in the newsroom that contained a motion that had recently been filed in the case, and it didn't have any notes, anything left on, in the envelope. Mm-hmm. It just had that motion. And so we took that, looked up the case, read through some of the other motions, and it all started to unravel a little bit as we looked through all the different filings that had been made over the last couple years.
And tell us, so what is this story? What is this gentleman doing? Who is he suing?
So his name's Corey Groshek. He lives in Green Bay. He essentially has found a part of a federal law called the Fair Credit Reporting Act that he believes companies violate every day, pretty much. Mm-hmm. And so what he's done is he applies to hundreds of jobs, almost one or two a day on average, and he then hopes that they will violate this law. Mm-hmm. And if he sees it, he will then demand from them a settlement, or he says he will threaten, or he threatens to file a class action lawsuit against them. And it's worked for him. He admitted in a recent deposition that he's made almost $250,000.
Wow.
Just in settlements alone.
So do you have any idea how many companies he's gone after and how much he's actually made so far total?
Well, we wouldn't have known this without this recent filing that we got. And he, in a deposition, said that he has threatened to sue, I believe it was 46 companies.
Okay.
He has sued three of them. About 20 of them have settled with him, he said, and that's for a total of $230,000.
Wow. And what do we know about this guy? What can you tell us about who he is, what he's like, how he happened upon this particular way of making money?
We actually know, because part of what he has to do to file his complaint is put in his job application.
Right.
So we know that he went to high school in Stevens Point. He went to a technical college and got an associate's degree in 2 years. He worked for about 7 years in customer service at a company, and then went to Land's End for a couple years in a similar customer service position.
Mm-hmm.
And from what he said in his deposition, in about early 2014, he somehow learned about this Fair Credit Reporting Act and conferred with a couple lawyers. And from there, he just found this. Some people would call it a loophole. Some would say that this is a real violation of people breaking the law.
Mm-hmm.
And found that this is a way for him to apparently make money. Mm-hmm. He might say that, you know, this is something that he's making sure that people are following the law.
Yeah.
We gave him the opportunity to talk with us.
Yeah, so you did not get return phone calls, but it sounds like you went up to track him down in Green Bay. Is that right?
Yeah, I sent him emails. I sent him, or I called him a couple times and left him messages. I do know that he heard them and read them because he didn't respond initially. So I went to Green Bay mm-hmm. and went and knocked on his front door. He initially didn't answer, and I kind of went around to a few of the neighbors to, you know, see if he actually does live here.
Mm-hmm.
As I was doing that, he got into his car and started to leave his house.
Okay.
And so I ran up to his car as he was in his driveway, told him who I was. He said that he knew who I was because he had gotten my messages. Obviously, didn't want to respond to them, or
right.
and said at the time that he didn't want to respond. He was not thrilled to see me there.
Yeah.
He accused us of stalking and wondered how we figured out where he lived and how we got his email address and things of that sort. He took down my license plate number and he then left.
Was he willing to talk a little bit at all about what he's doing and threatening these lawsuits?
He was only willing to tell me why he didn't want to talk with me, which is essentially he believes that there, you know, is pending litigation, which is true, and, you know, that he felt like it could somehow jeopardize that litigation.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me that, and he also told me why he felt like I was violating his privacy and why he didn't really want to see me there.
Okay. And can you just tell us a little bit about this Fair Reporting Act and also how the legal community regards this story that you're writing about? You've spoken to some legal experts as well. How do they regard this gentleman's, you know, plight?
Well, the Fair Credit Reporting Act is a law that was enacted back in 1970.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty technical, but essentially the part that is important here is that if a company wants to get your credit report,
mm-hmm.
which about half of companies do during the hiring process, according to some studies, they have to make a very clear disclosure of their intention to get that report.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is where Mr. Groshek says that these companies aren't doing that in the way that they're supposed to by law. There are differing opinions on, you know, the approach that he's taken and some of the technical things around this type of process. There are some who feel like this is a really technical thing that they're taking advantage of, that they feel like this is just a money grab.
Mm-hmm.
There are others who see this and say, well, follow the law. If you don't want to have to pay for this, then follow the law.
Right.
And so, you know, there are companies that he's not the only one doing this.
Is that right?
There are companies that have been sued in similar fashion and have paid up to $5 million in settlements. And one of the companies that Mr. Groshek is suing has preliminarily agreed to settle with him.
Okay.
And, you know, for, I believe it was almost $250,000, he will only get about $7,000 of that. The rest will go to people who had applied to the company.
Now, when companies are stung by Mr. Groshek or someone like him, do they then change their procedures? Have you seen any of that?
We have. I don't know that for sure.
Okay.
The companies, we don't know which companies he has settled with. He actually has only sued three companies, but he has said that he's threatened to sue about 40 others. And we don't know anything about, you know, how that played out because we don't have his full deposition,
mm-hmm.
because it's under seal, and because there are no legal documents that are public for those companies that he's threatened. And so for the other three, those are pending cases that have involved lawsuits that he's actually filed. And so we don't know yet whether they have or will change any of their policies. My guess is that there's a whole lot of people in human relations that are looking at this type of thing, given that, you know, he's not the only one doing this across the country.
Excellent. And will you continue to follow this story after this story publishes? Is this something that you'll follow up on? What happens next?
Yeah, we definitely will. We're interested in getting a copy of his deposition,
uh-huh.
Which is currently being fought over by the lawyers in the case. You know, how much of it, if any of it, should be released.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like that part of it will potentially be released. And so that could lead to some interesting additional details in this case.
Excellent. Thanks for talking about it.
Thanks for having me.
To read Jacob's story, go to jsonline.com. You can also find it in today's Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. The world's largest music festival is right around the corner. So what's it like to cover Summerfest? I sat down with Journal Sentinel music writer Piet Levy to get the behind-the-scenes scoop at the big gig.
Tell me, what is it like to cover Summerfest?
It's the most thrilling and stressful experience of the year. It's crazy. You know, I still can't believe it exists in a way, because I know it's been around for 49 years, but you know, by day 10 every year, it's like, oh my gosh, this is day 10, and there's still another day after this. And I've lost count of. And when you think back to the first day, it's like last year, it's like the Rolling Stones happened. Like it feels like years ago. So it flies by, and there's just so much to cover. But there's no real kind of adrenaline rush on the job like covering Summerfest, because the deadlines are really tight, and you're seeing so many different things, and you have to be a quick expert on so many different types of music. So it's a real blast. It's a privilege and a lot of fun.
How many years have you been covering Summerfest now?
I don't know. I've lost count, too. I mean, I've been a full-time music writer since 2012, so every year since 2012. But I've in a freelance capacity, I've covered all sorts of different things. And I remember in 2005, one of my first assignments, I'm not sure why I was given this assignment, but I reviewed like a kids' performance on the kids' stage. Which was really awkward, because it was like, you know, little kids and then me with a laptop, like sitting there, like taking some notes.
No.
That was me as an intern. That was a little bit rough. But it was still fun. I mean, yeah, so I've been, you know, my first Summerfest was 2005, and I've covered it on and off since then, and just really aggressively the last few years.
What have you noticed changing about Summerfest?
I feel like the lineup's gotten much better. I remember in 2005, I wasn't, you know, there was definitely things that I liked that were playing on the grounds, but there wasn't as much that really kind of jumped out at me. You know, I wasn't as kind of geeked about Summerfest back then as I think I am now. And I think just over the years, it's just gotten better. I mean, I think it used to, and it's probably not fair to say, but, you know, people used to kind of consider kind of like a boomer festival around those years. And now, you know, you definitely have acts that cater to that audience, that demographic, but you have, you know, way more local bands getting really great slots, and you have just much more diverse types of music, and I think it's just much more appealing to me as just a music lover, but also my music tastes have grown, too, and my awareness of things, so it could be a combination of my ignorance at the time and also the fact that, yeah, maybe Summerfest has gotten better.
Where do you see Summerfest going next?
Gosh, I don't know. I mean, I think it's interesting that I think it's going to keep kind of doing what it's doing. You know, I think there's a sense that, you know, sometimes maybe you get this feeling from Summerfest, but you certainly get it from people in town that, you know, well, there's not the same kind of media attention or hoopla around it as like a Coachella or a Lollapalooza. I don't know if it really needs that. You know, yes, it's a massive festival. It's the world's largest music festival. But, you know, it still feels very much like a Milwaukee festival, and I think that's great. And there's, you know, it's cool that there's so many diverse types of acts, which I think is very unique. And the fact that it goes on for so many days, and the fact that there are so many local bands playing, you know, great packed slots, too. It makes it a very unique festival, and the price point is crazy, too. I mean, you know, there's a lot of festivals that are just so expensive to get into. And Summerfest says that's not the case at all. So, you know, I think that just makes it a really unique festival. And, you know, I've covered Lollapalooza and other festivals, but I really get the most joy from covering Summerfest. It is so unique. It is so different. And from the perspective of a music lover and a music journalist, it's fun to kind of jump from, you know, a Sir Mix-a-Lot to a Sir Paul McCartney, you know, within, you know, the matter of a couple of days. That's what makes this the festival special and makes my job so thrilling when I cover it.
So we lost the KNE local music stage this year, but there are still plenty of opportunities to see local artists at Summerfest. Which opportunities are you most excited about?
Yeah, I mean, the loss of the K&E local music stage was certainly a blow because there were a lot of kind of smaller local bands that played that stage, and it was their chance to say, we played Summerfest, and they could tell their family, and they could, you know, tell other potential venues and people, like, you know, we've played Summerfest. Without it, there's definitely fewer local bands playing, but still the vast majority of the 800 bands playing Summerfest are local bands. And what's great to see is that Summerfest, they've been doing this for a while now, but I feel like they're doing it more and more often, where they're booking local bands with some really prime 8 p.m. slots, well matched with a headliner. And it's really great to see. So a perfect example is Kings, which is an electronic duo that's got a lot of attention locally. They've got a slot right before Martin Garrix, who's a massive EDM star and certainly the biggest, you know, EDM person at Summerfest this year. And that'll be, you know, probably the most packed show on the grounds. That's on opening night. And so for a local duo to do that and to play for thousands of people more than they've ever played before, that's really cool. You've got that also with New Age Narcissism, a hip-hop collective opening for The Roots. Again, it's really well-matched. Or Trapper Shep, an Americana artist who's opening for Ray LaMontagne, who has a very similar kind of vibe as well. So it's cool to see that, you know, that not only are local bands getting these great slots, but also the talent bookers of Summerfest are thinking, okay, this is a perfect match for this, and they're finding local bands to kind of be that great warm-up act.
And in terms of some of the bigger headlining acts, which ones are you excited about?
Definitely excited for Paul McCartney, who's playing July 8th, and that show sold out really quickly. I was just stunned by his Miller Park performance in 2013. It was just incredible. He went on for almost 3 hours. It was just sweltering in the stadium. And he played all those songs, you know, with just so much passion and appreciation. And he just seemed so personable, even though it was a massive stadium. And he was just, you know, covered in sweat and just working really hard. But he didn't even take, like, a sip of water. It was stunning. It was absolutely stunning that he could do a three-hour show without even drinking water on such a hot night. But his voice sounded amazing. I think it's going to be almost impossible, if not totally impossible, to top that show at Summerfest. But I'm certainly excited to see him in this new setting. I think there's some really interesting double bills, too, on the Marcus Amphitheater. I'm really intrigued by Alabama Shakes co-headlining with Chris Stapleton, who are not in the same genre, but they have gotten a lot of acclaim. And yeah, I think it's going to be an interesting show to see them kind of combine and see how the audiences react to both sets. And then Sting and Peter Gabriel closing night, really interested in that too, because they'll be not only doing their own sets, but playing songs together, which will be really special.
All right. Well, that's it. Good luck covering it this year.
Thanks.
You can find out more about this year's Summerfest celebration at tapmilwaukee.com. I'd also suggest picking up today's Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. You'll find this year's Summerfest guide in it. The guide includes information on new food, family attractions, and ways to get in for free. We'll end today's show here. Thanks so much for listening. Again, I'm your host, Katie O'Connell. One quick programming note. We will not have a show next week with the upcoming 4th of July holiday. Behind the Headlines will return on Sunday, July 10th. Take care until then, and have a happy and safe 4th of July weekend.
At Market District, we believe in the power of great taste. So here's a little taste of all the delicious possibilities. Juicy, hand-picked heirloom tomatoes. Seared certified Angus steak over aged cheddar mashed potatoes. Or how about fresh dough stretched by hand for every house-made pizza? Is your mouth watering yet? From produce to meats to chef-made meals, discover great taste at Market District.